Welcome to the Rambling Ranger podcast, episode 27. My name is Luke Taylor, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. I don't think I quite do you justice, Bob, to introduce you, so I'm going to let you do that yourself. Bob Reed, everyone.
Hi, I'm Bob Reed. To sort of give you some information, I've been a ranger for a long, long time. Basically been a member of SCRAV from roughly 1975 and still heavily involved with today. About myself, I was born in 1946 in Larkhall, Lanarkshire, and went to a rural school with many farmers and mining children. Spent my spare time at weekends and holidays from 8 years of age working on farms with an agricultural contractor, working at seasonal harvesting, thrashing mills, haymaking, baling, duties of other farms, and working at Claisdale Horse. So that was my introduction to the countryside and basically where my love came from it. When I reached the age to go to high school, I wanted to go to Kersal Residential College, which focused on the provision of for education and farming. This was where my interest associated with nature, mainly because I came across a number of incidents with wildlife, and it got me really hooked on that, such as finding a fawn, to which I made the mistake by touching it to find it the next day that its mother had returned and killed it. It was flat as a pancake, mainly because I had touched it, and geez, obviously the fawn had smelt my presence and rejected the young deer. And also other things such as focus, where harvesting cornfields with a Albion binder, the old way of Stooks. We cut the whole field until the last run of the machine, and that's when the fox walked out and quietly left the field, and was in no hurry, right? So that really was an introduction to my love of the countryside, was through farming, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. Sadly, my father died when I was 10. I went at the age of 12 to the town secondary school and left at 15 years of age. I was involved in the local scout group and enriched through so many different challenges associated with the great outdoors. Became a Queen Scout associate and assistant scout master. Became a time-served apprentice joiner and completed 5 years of attending college. Day of release, night school, receiving second guilds and FTC in building construction. I worked all over Scotland, England, and before becoming a ranger, I became an amateur diver with the Scottish Sub Aqua Club and progressed to club diving officer in three clubs, completing my first class practical diving certification. I was interested in underwater archaeology such as Cranochs and Loch Lomond, and working in Loch Doon. Became a champion in 1968 about marine conservation, highlighting the damage scarlet boats were doing to the marine environment around the west coast and its islands. I became a registered professional diver, working on various marine engineering projects, all terminals and underwater surveys.
Well, you've got obviously there a huge amount, and as you mentioned, that kind of long history, obviously, from before that you were a ranger. I think we touched upon it with George Potts, where certainly the around that era that you obviously were thinking about it, had that interest in the outdoors, and by the sounds of it, obviously the parallels between obviously agriculture and nature and the outdoors is even more of a common thing nowadays, you know, ranger services working with landowners and everything else. But I always find out, I think we first met in 2018, it's first when I got involved with SCRAT at the Ranger Rendezvous. and I didn't quite realise the significance of, I don't know, people like yourself, and obviously so much history. I'm a fraction of the mere time obviously you've spent even as a ranger, and nevertheless the other stuff that you've done in your life, and I'm always still finding out stuff new, which we'll touch upon in this episode. I know you've got so much to share and talk about, which I'm looking forward to. So that obviously, the kind of short summary that you've given there, that led into what kind of sparked that then interest into kind of conservation and ranger work of that time? Because what time are we talking here?
The 1970s.
1970s. So how about you kind of set the scene then and tell us what that time was like?
I would say the involvement of how the countryside was being evolved, and it goes back to 1947. Where in Lanarkshire here there was a strategy of doing a mid-Clyde development plan for the future.
Mm.
That was in 1947. Within that plan there was a number of aspects which they were going to look at, and it was basically after the war where they looked at the infrastructure for the future, such as housing, roads, airports, industrial estates, schools, etc., etc., the need for the future, and the housing requirements as well. So therefore, that was then known as the Abercrombie Report. And Professor Abercrombie, he was bold in his statements because he looked at the industrial belt of Scotland, i.e. Lanarkshire, and decided that one of his great quotes was, "Lanarkshire is a good example of what not to do in the future." And while cities are better places, they will still be good places to get out of. And he also identified that there was remnants of loveliness in Lanarkshire, which was Drumpellier, was Shatler Row, High Parks, and various areas that were just remnants. And from that, another person who was involved in that exercise, Robert Graves. Now, Sir Robert Graves was SCRA's second president.
Wow.
A gentleman. I spent a lot of time with him, getting to know him, and he was very much a planner and identified the very areas the park is today as countryside issues and would be ideal for countryside leisure and recreation.
Mm.
And therefore, that goes takes the history back to where it started to evolve. Now, the important things like roads and schools and all the infrastructure that was required, countryside was sort of last. And it wasn't until the sort of late 1960s, early 70s, that the governments looked at the future of countryside and how it should be dealt with. And the whole planning issue was going through major changes and upgradings also at the same time. And therefore, the countryside plan, it was looked at preparing to produce a plan that would be implemented. Really, it came a few years later, and from that, the Countryside Commission was formed, and a Park System for Scotland was established. And the good thing about the Park System for Scotland was it's to build country parks near to public population.
Mm.
To allow them to get easy access.
Yeah.
And from that, it evolved. Local authorities were having problems as well, and eventually we've seen the creation of regional authorities, such as Clyde Region Council. So that's where we came to the states of, well, in Lanarkshire here, it was first of all Strathclyde Country Park creation.
Mm. We've obviously just we briefly met up there. I don't know if maybe you could mention it now. What is the significance of Strathclyde Country Park?
it was viewed, or when the plans were being basically put out, it was seen to be to go in three phases. Phase one was to create an Olympic international rowing course.
Right. Wow.
That was man-made created.
Yeah.
And that in itself is quite an interesting story. In that it was designed by Hydrology Science, from the research centre at Wallingford, and it holds, it's 200 acres of water, it holds about 640 million gallons.
Wow.
Designed to take the river in spate, so it's stood the sort of years of being able to cope with whatever has come its way. The River Clyde at Stockley Park is can rise to 18 feet above its normal level, which is scary.
Yeah. Fuck Glasgow at that rate.
The other side of it was the historical side, and also the Roman bathhouse, which is discovered in the building of it. The site of Hamilton Palace, Hamilton Mausoleum, and also Bodwell Hall Village, which was a mining village. So the whole area underneath Stockley Park, about 8 metres of coal was removed.
Wow.
And it then sank 18 feet, the whole area. And let's say the Hamilton Mausoleum in itself sank 18 feet.
Mm.
And the cottage which is associated sank 15 feet. and yet these buildings are still standing today, except the palace. But that's another story. So really, that was the stage one. Also, woodland, countryside, rangers on the ground to provide resource. And it's also interesting that when the great plan for having a ranger service at Stockley Park was mooted in one of the national papers, they said that they would need the Texas Rangers, not countryside rangers, because we had within and around the park area at that time over 250,000 people lived in a 3 mile radius.
Wow.
The park today, or recently under the Scottish Tourist Board, estimate that the visitor numbers annually is in the region of 5 million.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so the place was designed to take that. The designers came up with some great things, like they made really super duper big benches out of sleepers to try and deter vandalism. The locals reckoned that by bringing a chainsaw they could have maybe 4 weeks wood to burn in the fire instead of 1 week. there's some good ideas and some
questionable
ones, right, yeah. Yeah, we don't build them like that any longer. Right. So really, we as a ranger service, we were to deal with or to work with the local communities.
Do you want to touch on how you fit into that picture then, obviously, with Strathclyde Country Park?
We are probably the only ranger service in Britain who actually worked a night shift.
Right.
Right. And that maybe indicates the issues that we had to deal with.
Of course.
We had large housing schemes on our boundaries, which young people had. It was their park.
What time was this? Sorry.
That would be 1975.
1975.
We were, as a ranger service, we were, it was at 20.
Right.
20 people. There were 16 males, one female, and two assistants, two apprentices.
Wow.
Right.
And it was, I believe, one of the largest, was it? First and largest?
It was what? Well, it's on a scale unique in Scotland.
Yeah.
Probably on scale in Britain,
yeah.
As a country park was concerned. Now, that was phase one that we've talked about. Phase two was to make it a multi-recreational area. So that
right.
was artificial ski slopes, climbing tours, you name it. It was going to be there. It didn't happen, unfortunately. And stage three was to take in DL Estate and Châtellerault.
Okay.
And the River Clyde basin all the way to Garrion Bridge.
Wow.
Yeah, so that would have been massive,
yeah.
Really. But unfortunately, due to political locally between district councils, etc., that didn't happen.
Mm.
The park was evolved by Hamilton District Council and Motherwell District Council and the old Lanarkshire County Council. They were the people who were mooted it. Strathclyde Region coming in 1975 allowed a better funding package. Now, the park was estimated to, that stage one would be £3 million. It ended up £11 million.
Which and, of the money at the time was a lot.
Yeah. Today that would be basically £100 million
yeah.
to build the park today.
phenomenal.
With its complexities, yeah.
So very different today then, 1975, yeah. You were working night shifts in Strathclyde.
Yeah.
Was that your first ranger job?
What? My first ranger job.
First ranger job, and you were just one of the kind of full-times, or was it seasonal? Yeah.
We were all full-time.
All full-time.
There was no seasonal.
So yeah, a difference there already. Yeah. So yeah, how about you just tell us about what that was like?
Interesting that you'd be out in night shifts and being on your boundaries at 6 o'clock in the morning, challenging people who are coming over your boundary with rifles, you know. We had to put a stamp on the place, and that was done by, not intentionally, but by having that influence on the ground. We were able to apprehend, catch people doing all sorts of things they shouldn't do. Some of these things went to prosecutions and went to court. So from a ranger, we got an introduction to court life.
Right. Wow.
And that was that was run-of-the-mill stuff, but it was also some serious stuff.
Yeah.
Because the area became an area for all types of antisocial behaviour, drug distribution,
yeah,
all sorts of stuff. That in itself was
so you, re-
You lived in adrenaline.
I was going to say you really wore the Texas Rangers just without the guns.
Yeah. But in saying that, we went out with to win over the community, the young people.
Mm.
And we did that by various ways.
Mm. What were some of those ways then?
Starting a football club.
Right.
Now, the football club was, the park had its own football club.
Okay.
Because we're all young people. So it was a, how could you put it? It was an opportunity to go out and kick the local youth and get away with it. Right. But we built a relationship, and that went on for years. We started a fishing club.
Yeah. Which I know you're still a man of today.
Well, yeah. Not so much in the sense of catching fish, but I better used to take worms for a walk. Involved in the park in fish transferring. We had a lot of problems in the park in the early days. We inherited the second most polluted river in Scotland.
Wow.
The first polluted river in Scotland is the North Calder. We have the South Calder.
Right.
On that, we spent 30 years monitoring that daily.
Wow.
And in the beginning, if we looked over the bridge at 7 o'clock in the morning and there was 80% of oil cover, iridescence on the river, that was a good day.
Right.
That was a really good day. We worked closely with the River Clyde Purification Board at that time, which are now SEPA. The River Clyde Purification Board had a monitoring station on the river to which we would go in on a Saturday and Sunday evenings, because we knew the steelworks were putting poisons. That's the stuff in the river.
Yeah,
which discharge in the river. To which we would then view the reading of ammonia, heavy metals, all sorts of nasties coming down. And that time, between a Sunday evening and a Monday morning, the needle was going off the graft.
Mm.
There were prosecutions taken against British Steel.
Right.
But we were also responsible for prosecutions taken on our own Strathclyde Sewage Department.
Right. So they were, polluting as well.
Misdemeanours, right? So, we were police in that sense. We policed the countryside for the benefit of the countryside.
Well, I imagine you would have had to at that time. Yeah. Did you work at all closely with, obviously, the local police and things at the time, or was it...
Very closely with the police. Yes. So much so, we, the policemen, seconded into our department for years. We worked alongside us. We were doing more prosecutions in the Strathclyde Park than what his mates were doing on the beat.
Right.
Policeman we had was a guy called Brian Wright, who was well experienced, was a really first class policeman.
Yeah.
And he and I, and I'll speak about it later, get involved in setting up the off road motorbike club.
Right.
But I remember one day we stopped two boys shoving a bike down the road, and just to speak to them and give them some good advice. And he asked the two boys, he says, "Well, what do you go to school to learn?" The boys looked at him, he says, "You go to school, I'm Mr. Wright, and this is Mr. Reed." That just summed it up. You know, that was the type of relationship we had.
Who would you say was the good cop and who was the bad cop?
Well, let's say it was slightly different. We used to do that in rangering. Like, see that wee guy in the Land Rover, you don't want him to come out of here.
How about you touch on the motorbike club just now then, seeing how we're at it?
Well, mainly, it's one of these things that all rangers would probably be scared of happening to them, is that a councillor comes up and says to you, "What are you doing about this problem in my area?" Which I said, "What problem?" He says, "Off-road bikes." Now, the area he was talking about was the area I was in charge of.
Right. So he was targeting you, would you say? Yeah. You're the man.
Yeah. Who, like, okay, I had spent years, and we'd spent years, it was a sort of adrenaline buzz.
Yeah.
The youngster was trying to get away, so that was adrenaline, and we were trying to catch him, that was adrenaline. But so it was in balance there. So
they told stories as well, funnily enough, by someone else down south with the ranger service. I don't know what time this was, but chasing off-road bikes with police on peat bogs and other moors, like helicopters, lights, the whole shebang, sounding like just the whole police kind of thing, which is obviously slightly different. But yeah, I can set the picture of obviously the sorts of things that were happening.
The bike club is basically set up because to come to the conclusion that it's a hobby.
Mm.
The sad thing being is there are no facilities.
Yeah.
I took a petition to the Scottish Parliament to ask why there was no provision. And the planning laws were so tight that you couldn't have it.
Yeah.
The number of hoops you had to jump through was just phenomenal.
Mm.
So I decided that we'd set up I got sort of directed to do something about this.
Yeah.
To which I decided that maybe the way best to do this is to start a club, try and get a bit of land.
Yep.
And the local authority went along with that. Now, I was invited to speak to a council meeting, to which I had to go and be tutored before as to what you do and what you don't do. But anyway,
what suits to wear and what suits not to. Right. Yeah.
So I knew that all the councillors that were there had a problem in their area, and they were just dying to gun for me on the day. So how do you deal with that, Robert? Well, I sat down and thought about it. I said, "You know something, the way I'm going to deal with this is, on the day I said, thank you for inviting me along. I says, I must say to you now that North Lancashire Council is the best local authority in Britain dealing with this issue."
Yeah.
So I defused the whole thing before they could even start on me, right? So I told them they're really good guys.
Yeah.
Right. So, the club evolved. We were able to get a bit of land off an explosive company.
Right.
An old ironstone bin, which was full of arsenic and all different other nasties, to which we had to get that analysed and all the rest of it. Anyway, we set up a club, and it's time ago, and it went 10 years.
Wow.
What did it achieve? It achieved something like, it was not only for North Lancashire, we were getting young people coming with parents from a 50 mile radius of Hart Hill.
Yeah. Wow.
How do you run it? You have strict legislation, strict rules by the national governing bodies, the insurance requirements and all the rest of it.
Mm.
We were doing 70,000 miles on that track, which was no bigger than three football fields.
Wow.
A year. Removing over 700 hours of noise from communities across central Scotland.
Yeah.
Won the Queen's Award for voluntary service.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Developed a training programme for young people to do coaching courses, first aid courses, college night school bike maintenance courses, and advanced bike maintenance. We had equipment, first aid caravans, defibrillators, you name it. When we wound up, we had about £21,000 in assets that we had to give away.
Yeah.
A major I was asked to go to Wales, England, Ireland, Northern Ireland to speak to police and local authorities. A lot of them came to see our particular setup.
Example
on how they wanted to do it. And, you know, that in itself was the recognition. I was did some work and dealt with what was known as the Red Rose project in Greater Manchester,
right.
and with the Manchester Metropolitan Police. That itself in the report, I'm classified as a technical advisor. I've never been on a bike or a quad bike.
I
always kept it that way,
right.
Because I didn't want people saying, this is your hobby.
Yeah.
It's a bit like rangering. I was never a member of a nature organisation or anything else until I retired, which I'm a member of the John Muir Award.
As a better example, actually, I don't know why this went through my head, but the common theme in these crime films and these horror, whatever, anything drug related, and it's normally the person distributing drugs, the rule is not to take the drugs you're distributing. And that's a similar theme, because otherwise, as you said, you fall into that pitfall. Would you say you were a pioneer at the time?
Total.
For that thing? Yeah. That sounds like it.
I spoke to almost every police service in Scotland.
Yeah.
I went to the northeast to do a thing. They were in Fraserburgh, they were having problems. To talk to them, but unknown to us, it ended up getting gatecrashed with people, the public. And there was all types of things. And someone was say, and the audience said something to me about. You don't do anything about these young people in bikes, and I went. A lot of people who stay around about you is probably going to be buying bikes, for their children. And I got an email some time later after Christmas to say, by the way, Bob, you were right. But at the end of the day, our kids were not just biking; they were into other sports.
Yeah,
they did the John Muir Award.
Right,
they did conservation work. We were the first and probably only green motorbike club in the world to be carbon neutral.
Right.
And we did that by each day a young person was at the track, a percentage of the fee went to buy a tree, and we went and planted trees in the wild woods and the borders, in local authorities, in nature reserves and country parks right throughout the Lanarkshire.
No, that's
so,
the cost of us.
And that thing... I get a lot of young people going out to me today who are saying, we really, really miss the club. It was a family, because mainly the parents became the volunteers.
Yeah.
We sent them to get first aid courses.
Trained,
And it was full first aid courses.
Yeah.
So they could take that into their workplace.
Yeah.
They could take it into their family life. We had kids, we had kids at, say, four and five doing CRP.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
It's a generational thing, and the skills, as you said there, the crossovers and the conservation, it wasn't just an after-school club. And I don't know, unfortunately, or, whatever, nowadays, I think I've heard examples of, things like similar of what you said, taking what I saw as these issues with, off-road biking and things, and putting them, providing, it's at the end of the day, providing the right facilities for them. But, would you say it's one of your, I suppose, proudest achievements or things that you've accomplished? I know you've done many, but at the time with Strathclyde and as a ranger, is that one of your most memorable things?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, the other most memorable one would be the young people I took from the local high school here through the technical department, and that ran a project for 12 years of young people turning up on a Friday.
Right.
Every Friday to do conservation work in Strathclyde Park. That was one of them.
How long did that last?
That again was over 12 years.
Wow.
There was other projects by other high schools, two other high schools, Blantyre and Coatbridge, which other rangers were involved in. For the project I had, it went 12 years. And doing, at that time, I did a breakdown on what actual contribution financially these young people brought. It was 12 young people who arrived in a minibus. And we got on there and we did all sorts of stuff. Today it would be in excess of £1 million that they contributed.
And so what was that through then? What was their contribution? Through?
Their contribution was of a young boy. They were young boys at secondary school who were non-certificated.
Yeah.
Who really wanted to leave school to prove that we were men and not boys any longer.
Yeah.
And therefore we were the outlet.
Yeah.
So they could come and do that.
Mm. Through conservation practical work.
Through conservation. And there was things like clearing out ice houses.
Right.
digging out the foundations or the lower aspects and cleaning out a dovecot.
Right.
These were the types of things.
Preservation. Making paths, history, heritage.
Building ponds. Yeah. They did everything.
They really did everything.
Yeah. And funny enough, I was out with the ranger who is now covering part of what my beat was.
Right.
And I went out there because she wanted to sort of find out what I was doing at the time. So, well, see all these trees there and see all this and all that. They were done with the boys for Larkhall Academy. So she got to the end of the day and said, were these done with Larkhall Academy? This is only one wee bit of the park that worked in.
So there was another...
I've always... and I ran a Duke of Edinburgh Awards scheme again for about 12 years within one of the local housing schemes. And I tell the story of one young lady who was about 14 at the time walked past the pavilion in North Motherwell drinking a bottle of Buckfast. And I said, I think you might want to come in here. She ended up getting her gold award for Duke Edinburgh.
Wow.
She did well within the John Muir Trust award systems.
Yeah.
She did all that and went overseas with them and on various things. So I was, I championed young people who were at disadvantage.
Mm.
That young woman now is married, has children, and she's holding down
a more successful, senior managerial
post.
So
you impacted people. Rangers can impact on people.
Mm.
The lad I caught taking weed out the park, and I said, can I do this? He says, I don't have electricity or gas. I have a baby in the house.
Mm.
I says, what's your address? We dropped off wood.
Right.
So, one thing about the ranger and difference from police, rangers don't need to work in the black and white.
Mm.
They can work in the grey areas. And
oh, that's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah.
So, your projects, well, both of them span obviously over 10 years. How long were you at Strathclyde Country Park for?
34 years.
34.
And I stayed on for 3 years to do the biking club because we hoped to establish a Centre for Excellence in Central Scotland and formed a trust for that. But unfortunately, North Lanarkshire decided that they weren't going to go much further with it.
Mm.
Interestingly enough, in the last year, I've been contacted with the Forest Land Scotland and others, local authorities like North Lanarkshire and Lothians and Borders and you name it. Want to resolve the issue of illegal biking in the countryside, and I'm going, I've been here before, I've got that badge.
Yeah.
I've been trying to give them some guidance.
Well, you're still keeping yourself relevant, and it shows the legacy that you've created still, you know, it's not off the past, it's still very relevant. I know you spent some time with, correct me if I'm wrong, North Ayrshire Ranger Service as well.
I've been involved, well, again, being in Skra, when North Ayrshire Ranger Service was set up, George Clark was the manager for it, but he was a ranger, he was on Skra Council and everything else, so I admire what they do in North Ayrshire. They're a very professional outfit, they always have been, and they deliver, and they're very much based within the country park, where a lot of other country parks, like Strathclyde Park, rangers are not necessarily delivering in the country park, they're delivering in the wider area.
That
in itself has implications. When a ranger service that used to be 20, then dropped to 10 and had 6 seasonals, and now down to 3 rangers. I mean, and they're covering half the area of North Lanarkshire.
I mean, it's a blanket issue that we've discussed and touched upon, where the changes now have been very drastic. We could maybe briefly touch upon that then just now. I mean, what are some of the most significant changes you've saw from your time as a ranger to obviously ranger services and rangers working with them now?
I think we were fortunate in the sense being is that through the CCS and the government grant system, ranger services in Scotland, as we set up, had a 75% grant aid. Now that grant aid two good points. One, it meant that we were employed. Two, that a lot of ranger services thought we were actually working for the CCS, right? And therefore we were sort of kept at arm's length, certain, as if we were going back
CCS
and telling stories.
CCS being, for the listeners, Countryside
Commission for Scotland. Great organisation. They brought the park system for Scotland to together, i.e. country parks, regional parks, and it wasn't going to be national parks, it was special parks. Because the debate, mainly because the national parks had been created in England and Wales, and Scotland decided not to go down that road at that particular time.
Right, much later.
But anyway, we had the freedom to evolve our ranger service, but we were fortunate that our first president was Frank Fraser Darling.
Right.
And he said at our very first conference that rangers had an opportunity to set the profession.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And that was one thing that I took on board, because in my time on Scra Council, I spent two terms of 6 years as chair. I spent 5 years as vice chair. So I was really engaged and had identified taking Scra forward, and that implication indicated that there were aspects of training that Scra had to decide what its role was, its aims and objectives. So from that way, we were fortunate that we probably had the opportunity to develop rangering as we saw it.
Whereas now it's obviously very different.
It's different now that there's a photograph of my first director up there. They all came from horticulture.
Right.
They all came from Edinburgh Botanic. You know, clever men.
Yeah.
But the word conservation didn't want to know it, because they came from a different professional background.
Right.
Everything was in Latin. Right.
It is what it is. Your time obviously spans over what you say 47 years as your career as a ranger. How do then, so we'll touch upon briefly the origins of Scra, but we won't go into it too much.
Right.
But what I want to focus on after that is what your involvement and your legacy with the Scottish Country Rangers Association has been. So just briefly, the origins of it, how did it come about for those that aren't aware, and then more significantly, your time with it.
Right, okay. Well, Scra evolved basically out of the 1974 Countryside Commission for Scotland's National Ranger Training Course, which was set up to, in some respects, provide training, which would say that it gave you the training to be a ranger in different locations, be it from the mountaintops, right down through the rural villages, towns, cities, and marine environment.
Very different to, you know, your Strathclyde Park, to your contrast of your Highlands. Very diverse backgrounds that they'll work in.
But each ranger did not always do the same job, but did have the bulk of the aims of being a ranger within, to be applied to the area of their situation.
Yeah.
I think that would probably bring it up to the point of, well, where did Scra, how did it move forward? It moved forward because we were fortunate, a lot of young rangers, and there was a mixed age group within the initial intakes, and they came from all walks of life.
Yeah.
They came from, our team of 20, there was only one who was a biologist. The rest were diesel mechanics, joiners, supermarket managers, electricians, Uncle Tom Cobble and all.
Right. We touched upon that with George.
But we had the opportunity for us, and we all gelled.
Absolutely, yeah.
And because we went on a National Ranger Training Course, that you remembered all the people
Yeah.
And then you build a relationship.
And you feel part of that
and
bigger,
you're part of a big family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So that's mainly where it would all come from. The sort of areas which I certainly tried to do when I was sort of chairing it was that identify opportunities.
Well, how did you become chair? Because that obviously doesn't just come about. How did you first
mainly because when I started in 1975, soon after that, Sky was having annual general meetings.
So you were involved in that through your time with Strathclyde, stuff. Yeah.
No sooner had I entered the job, right?
That training was there, and
there was members in Strathclyde Ranger Service who were actually more or less at the founding of
the
association, right? So we didn't have any option of joining. So we were in. So it was a case of, because of my diving experience, I had a fairly background in constitutions, etc. Scrad needed to update its constitution, so I got involved in that and got on it, and was elected onto council, and from there it just
progressed. Maybe we should touch upon some of those significant people then that were involved with SCRA at your time, the kind of founders and part of Strathclyde.
David Rose, who was first commission, he was first chair. People like Keith Graham, who also became chair. Tony Anthony, from Midlothian, senior rangers, who was given the OBE for his services to volunteering.
Wow.
And he was chair. So, yeah, I was falling down the line of people who first became vice chair to Keith Graham. And he and I worked well. I sort of identified opportunities that SCRA might want to, not only what you wanted to do to go down the line of becoming professional, but to get you on the road to become professional.
Yeah.
So I put to SCRA that we should be involved in International Year of Disability in 1981. And out of that came the whole Healthy Outside work.
Which we have a video for. I will make sure to link that and include it. It's fun fact, the actual intro music to this podcast. Yep. I loved it so much. It's of the era, the time, and it does picture the whole era that we're talking about.
And that was all about Rangers, having to understand all the different types and implications of disabilities and park users, and to be a bit more professional in how they went about dealing
and
with it.
And access for everyone's a huge thing nowadays.
That's right.
And it was
We were there in 1981. You know, we set the scene.
Yeah.
We identified an issue as an association. We got a lot of that. The disability working group within SCRA lasted for 20 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. And we were sat at the big table and lots of discussions concerning that. But anyway, and that also linked to the International Year of Youth, 1983-84, to which I sat on their working group for that. And again, we produced a lot of information, such as a booklet which gave young people where to go in the countryside, how to treat the countryside, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And that went to every secondary school in Scotland.
Wow.
Involved with healthy health education group. I went and sought funding from Clydesdale Bank.
Wow.
Because there was no lottery. You could go and apply for. You go and chap doors and put your case.
Successful
in that. Yep. So another thing, SCRA did have at one time 7 different working groups going, some long term, some short term. But I felt that was a case where young rangers could get involved and hopefully they would aspire to want to take it further and basically stand for council eventually.
Here's a question for you then, because obviously I think the real issue we struggle with just the profession in general, we're obviously all harder done by in these times in regards to employers, you know, the amount of rangers we have in our services, the amount of work that we do still to this day as rangers, but the amount of time that takes, and obviously our involvement with SCRA and other organisations and wider opportunities does come those limitations. What was the kind of intake or the involvement in young people at that time? Because as I find, obviously, as one of the fairly younger rangers, even in the profession, I rarely meet people of my age in their early 20s. What kind of was the scene for like young people or young rangers at that time?
Young meaning what age were a band?
Well, that's true. I mean, I suppose
You need
for
apprentices at that early age. Yeah.
So there was more apprenticeship opportunities then.
Well, there was the opportunity. There wasn't many, very many services took it up.
Right.
Why we went down, why our management down that road, I don't know.
So similar issues then to today, where it's the employer's commitment to take on young people. What year then did you start off as chair with SCRA?
Oh, it was the 1980, round about 1984, I was vice chair. No, yeah, round about that, give me a minute. I need to look it up to get the right dates for you for
No, you're okay.
that. It would be about 1984, basically, I became chair. That allowed me to
Act on those ideas that you had.
But engaging other people and having opportunity for people to come together. But also at the same time, we had regional groups all over Scotland. So Rangers were working together at a local level and a national level. And I feel today we don't have that to the same extent. And I've tried in the last 10 years to try and get certainly in Strathclyde here. And we used to have two different groups in Strathclyde.
We mentioned the limitations with obviously young people, and I think the limitations are still there, as said, with employers, the capability, just the sheer amount, commitment and time rangers and ranger services have. It's that, again, morale aspect's really important. I know obviously there is a few working groups still exist. One of my first involvements with SCRA was with the Lothian and Borders Working Group, which is still very much going on. So they still, do exist, but as you said, there's still very many rangers, I believe, out there, that aren't necessarily isolated, but that working group definitely provides an outlet to connect with your fellow peers, and just share ideas and connect and engage. And I know a lot of people even on the working groups, for whatever reason, even you don't necessarily even need to be a membership of SCRA. It can be that just working with other people within the same profession, which is really important.
Yeah, and that makes it more diverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What were some of your, I suppose, then greatest or most pursued things with your time as chair, with SCRA?
As chair, it was very much a relationship with the Countryside Commission for Scotland at director level and below. I mean, I used to have meetings with Ruth Grant when she was director of Ranger Training.
I will try to get. She is on my to podcast list as well, so I'm gonna. I will get Ruth's story.
And Ruth and I and Tony Clark, we went to Denmark, because the Danish had picked up from Donna Aldrich, who was the director of interpretation for Countryside Commission for Scotland. He was also a consultant and worked and went to Denmark and basically helped them form the model for to go down the road of establishing the Ranger Service. So it was a 3 year. It was a 3 year trial. We were invited over with some people from England, Ranger Services, ACR at the time, Association of Countryside Rangers, to evaluate what the training had achieved. So Ruth, we went there, and that was a really interesting opportunity to see a new Ranger Service be evolving in another country.
Yeah.
One of the best guided walks I ever went on was that trip.
Right.
Because we went out, as Denmark's very flat, it has one area which is slightly hilly, I wouldn't say mountainous. It's about 20 metres above sea level. But anyway, we spent toured about to see various opportunities. But the best guided walk took place there.
Yeah.
because as we walked, we were told to sit down and take in the view, and the ranger said that he would be back in a minute, which he came back with a box of Carlsbergs. Then we went along and we were told to sit down again, and there was more Carlsbergs.
Brilliant.
So that was really an interesting visit. So, yeah. And there was lots of different opportunities to go abroad, and, opportunity to go to Poland.
Right.
That came about through Margaret Thatcher, God bless her. She established the Know-How Front, to which there was a group from UK went to Poland to see the Polish national park system.
Right.
Which was established at the very same time as the Americans were establishing the
national parks. Right.
In America. Fascinating place.
Yeah.
Fascinating people. We were bowled over. Yeah. And we went there just soon after the Berlin Wall came down.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we were there, and there was areas you weren't allowed to. I mean, you asked young, take photographs, and you asked young rangers what they felt about their future.
Yeah.
They didn't really speak about it because there was always years about.
Right.
It wasn't until they came to Scotland to our international conference.
Yeah, yeah.
That through vodka and other drinks, they opened up and they expressed their feelings and what their hopes were. Right. So maybe not all speak the same language, but at the end of the day,
Similar stories.
Yeah.
That's Skra obviously continues its connections with international relations. And would you say at the time with your involvement in Skra and the legacy that's lasted, the significance with those relationships, and almost a pioneer for examples of how ranger services worked in Scotland at the time that could be copied and pasted elsewhere.
Yeah, very much so. And even in not so many years back, Scotland was getting, Skra was being approached to help out in providing some training within Europe. For a number of reasons that didn't happen, but at least we were recognised that we really have a model which is well worth modifying.
Yeah, adopting and then modifying.
Right.
Yeah.
So that in itself goes quite a long way to it. Yeah.
How long was your reign of chair then with Skra?
I did 2 6 years.
6 years. Wow.
Two sessions.
Yeah.
And the reason I did two was basically that my involvement in IRF,
which we'll touch upon next,
My involvement in IRF from the very start, but trying to look at a way of bringing ranger services worldwide together.
Would you say that we'll touch upon the significance of the International Ranger Federation next. What would you say then was your most proudest or memorable, whatever you would like to call it, achievement within your role as your chair as Skra?
I would say probably IRF.
Yeah. So then, so essentially the follow-on.
I was chair, and when Skra held its first international conference, that was the time that gave us the opportunity to do something about it.
Yeah.
And that to me was maybe the most important. Now, is it interesting that, you asked the question that I was trying to answer.
We'll lead into that then, the International Rangers Federation. So obviously what you've described there is the importance or significance of Skra at the time led into much wider contributions to ranger services, not just within Scotland but the rest of the UK, and ambitions for international collection, communication, whatever you would like to call it. So How did that come about? Because I got told the story that, I think it was at the rendezvous last year, that this idea of an International Rangers Federation came about with, was it yourself and two other gentlemen, with a few glasses of whiskey and a
no,
pub.
No, well...
I've tried to
quell this rumour about drink in a pub, but mate, it was fun.
We can settle it right now. Tell us the true story of how did the International Rangers Federation come about, and what was your...
Just to go back slightly from that,
Scran
in 1976 attended an international conference in Europe. So from a very early time within SCRA, we had links with other things. At the same time, our association established a mutual affiliation with Association of Countryside Rangers, which is now CMA.
Countryside Management Association, other UK Rangers Association.
That's what they moved to. When I became SCRA in 1986, I contacted Rick Smith, chair of the US Association of National Parks, AMPRS, seeking a mutual affiliation between them and ourselves, and that was accepted. In 1989, we had a joint party of the UK Rangers to visit Poland. That's the one I was just telling you about there, through the UK Government Know-How Fund. SCRA held its first international conference in 1991 on Loch Lomond. I contacted AMPRS in the States, inviting their chair at that time, Rick Gale, to attend, and told him that we would be focusing on looking at establishing an international body for rangering around the world. Rick was unable to attend, but he sent Bill Hulley in him, who is now an honorary member of SCRA. Through our affiliation with ACR, Gordon Miller, chair. Gordon and I go back 40 years. He was chair of the ACR when I was chair of SCRA. We still contact us. We've travelled together in the States and elsewhere. We had this reciprocal arrangement between the two associations where you go to each other's conferences, etc. So I knew Gordon was going to be there. So he brought a delegation of Polish Rangers who were doing the second leg of our visit to Poland, and that was of national parks in England and Wales, and then coming to Scotland for our international conference. We were aware that many ranger services, overseas ranger services, had discussed the ideas of a global body, but nobody was doing anything about it. So, on a boat trip to Loch Lomond, I pulled Bill and Gordon aside and had a meaningful discussion about the possibility of creating a body. After an hour, I made the statement, let's stop talking about it, let's do it. So it lies here, That evening in Ballacotel, a small group discussed, and the Danish Bondo Anderson was involved in that. We had a discussion on our thoughts for going forward. From the next year, I travelled monthly to Peak District National Parks, to Gordon's, to establish the nuts and bolts, and became the IRF's first secretary, seeking support around the world plus development constitution. SCRA put up £1,000 to assist meeting that goal. That was a lot of money then.
Yeah.
Now, Gordon and I went to America to try and get £10,000 out of them, which they gave us. It was to go and do a hard sale. But we achieved it. So, finally, in 1992, the association was ratified at Peak District National Park, but it was founded on Loch Lomond. At the very point I could take you to.
Which some might argue, the Loch Lomond nowadays is, internationally renowned for being one of the, the heart, if not, of Scotland's, countryside, whatever you would like to call it.
I remember in the 1950s when the Teddy Boys used to come out to Glasgow and see how many green trees you could cut down and burn.
Some may argue that's still the same, but
opportunity, and it happened. It happened, but a lot of time and effort was put into it to happen.
I mean, a lot of people, well, not so much people, but by the sounds of it, you know, having those meetings, that consistency of going to these places, talking to the people, as you said, I very much do action rather than just want to, you know, the talks, which clearly went a long way.
Ah, yep. And on that, on that working year at Peaks National Park, there was other people involved.
Mm.
From ACR, who we were able to, so that was a team of five of us who were actually taking it forward. So by the next time, by the time it was ratified, we had the constitution, we had all the links, we had things up running and ready to go. Had evolved the badge, in itself.
Do you want to touch on the badge? The badge.
The badge was basically, yes, yin and yang. I'm pleased that actually it went that way, and
yeah,
it was Bill Hillane who sort of moved it towards that should be the design, which takes me back to our own badge. You know, the only badge in the world with people involved in it, and I think that says a lot.
Please touch on it. Yeah,
about what SCRA's all about.
Yeah, yeah. So SCRA's badge is. Yeah. That nice relation between, obviously, we take pride in our connecting people to nature, and the significance of having a widely worn badge to represent the profession within Scotland's really significant.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it's a bit like any of your, if you have a brand, it sticks, and
yep,
that's kind of,
yep,
I'm sure the philosophy was behind the SCRA badge.
Yeah, I remember being at a conference, I won't say where, but a certain ranger who was in charge of it said a wee statement. He says, "I work in a lovely place and I live in a lovely place." And I said, "Well, can I say something? I don't work in a lovely place and I don't live in a lovely place. But expect the rangers here to be wearing his badge because I'm telling people to come to the wider countryside and look for the ranger."
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I went through the situation with the badge, and it was a competition to see how many designs could come up for.
Right.
And at that meeting, that conference meeting, it was decided that we weren't having any of them. We're adapting that badge.
Yeah, that one, and only, and is still, used today.
And that's it. And also, I was involved in helping to set up the NICSA, which was Northern Ireland Countryside Management Forum.
Mm.
And they went down the same road, and I went, "I've been here before." And I said, "Oh, wait. I said, "Why don't you go and get a Celtic symbol?"
Yeah.
So they went to the art college, and they came up with a beautiful.
Fantastic.
I've been here before. I think I better say something to you.
The importance of having a badge that means more than just what the picture shows.
Yeah.
You know, it's the wider significance and meaning, which is clearly, you know, been thought about in the SCRA badge and the International Rangers Federation badge.
From the IRF point of view, and it tickles me greatly that within this town, Lark Hall, there's also a local man called Stevenson Hamilton, founded Cougar National Park.
Wow. Which is where, for
South
our listeners?
Africa.
Wow. Yeah. So two significant
men in one place. Unfortunately,
or?
Unlike me, he is off the land of gentry of the Duke of Hamilton.
Right.
He's a branch of the family, to which I cannot really claim.
So for just, you know, for those that don't know Lark Hill, just, Glasgow peripheral, you can find, you know, the most humblest, significant, and well-accomplished people in the most, you know, unheard-of places, I would like to think. What then, your time with the International Rangers Federation, maybe let's talk about some of the things that were significant, things that the Federation achieved over kind of the time that you were the founding and heavily involved, and then maybe the path that I suppose it's taken and the kind of changes that have occurred. First off, how about you just touch upon some of the things that it's greatly achieved?
Right, well, from an international point of view, Gordon and I went to the States to try and raise £10,000 to get the first conference up and running in Poland. That was a lot of work, and I think there was about 14 Rangers for Scotland that attended that.
Wow.
Countryside Commission for Scotland. For SNH, it was just a changeover. It would be. they put some money towards supporting it, and we produced various documents to go to that to sort of promote ourselves and taking that forward. I have been to 1, 2, 3 congresses.
Which are the World Four. Ranger Congresses?
The World Ranger Congresses.
So they occur every...
First one I went to was in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one. Then I went to Kruger,
mm-hmm.
National Park in South Africa. Then the States.
Yep.
And in between that, Scotland, when it was hosted at Stirling.
Which is important to highlight, yeah. So what year was that the World Ranger Congress was held in Stirling? I can add it in at the end.
2006, I think.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was 2006.
So which seems, you know, even now,
a long time ago,
which, you know, isn't, because it's still in the 2000s. So yeah, the history goes back a lot further than what, you know, many might believe, which is important to highlight.
In Kruger National Park, to me, that was quite an important one for me, in the sense being is that... I was invited onto a working group for the period that we were there, looking at the basic qualifications of what a ranger should be globally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we came up with a document. And that's probably one of the best times or the best experience I had of working in a group
who
had a focus and they only had a few days to do it and to come up with it. And I was, for by Bill Wade from the States, I was the only other person from the Northern Hemisphere.
Right.
The rest were from South Africa and
Bill. Yeah. No, that's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, where IRF is today, I think they still have a fair bit of development still to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think the establishing of Thin Green Line Foundation has been good and this meets the requirements that we envisaged the IRF to do. But IRF as an organisation in itself needs to acquire funding to make them have the ability of moving forward.
And not be reliant, and delivering.
Yeah.
So take lead on what originally they were. And you know, bring in those wider ranger communities, connections, as important as obviously the Thin Green Line is for, you know, wildlife rangers and the rangers that put their lives on the line.
Yep.
It's significantly important.
Yep.
And you know, there has been that alliance there. It's important to stand in your roots and obviously what
it's growing a lot more now and other organizations getting involved with other organizations. So there's a global voice here.
Yeah.
Which
can be, you know, impactfully used if done correctly. Yeah.
The COP in Glasgow, I mentioned earlier, the Thin Green Line, were there because they have a group in London.
Right. Yeah.
Who's sort of dealing with the Northern Hemisphere.
Yes.
But that's where I said earlier that SCRA missed the boat. We could have promoted IRF in Glasgow, in our country, more or less in our hometown.
Yeah.
And we didn't. Obviously, that was because of obvious other reasons, but maybe we should have thought that through a wee bit better. That's my own view.
No, of course. Yeah. But I think it's important to highlight, and I think it's good to be reflective. I think George put it best. I think oftentimes we think we're still living in the past. And that, you know, the accomplishments and achievements that I've had, as significant and great as they could have been, you know, in many ways, unfortunately, a lot of those things don't exist because of whatever reasons today.
Mm-hmm.
The ranger community and, you know, rangers actually on the ground has drastically changed from the times that obviously that you mentioned.
Yep.
And as we spoke with many people on the podcast about the contribution rangers can have to SCRA, it's what SCRA is, it's what's kept it always going. But as I said, via hard times and, you know, even just people's struggles within their own ranger services, we understand the struggles that, as SCRAT does, and the amount of time volunteers can put into SCRAT as a volunteer, led organization. Sometimes more than others over the years will peak and trough.
Yep. And, oh, totally.
And, that then hinders the capabilities and the functions and the core duties that SCRAC can then achieve. And as you said, something like that would have been fantastic, but having the resources to do so, you need quite a lot to do. Which, in current times with Ranger Service cuts and Rangers able to contribute their time to SCRAC, there just isn't enough to achieve something on that scale that might have been done so in the past. I think, as you said, we're seeing we have changes within the International Rangers Federation as of recent years, and we're starting to see again growth and change as all these organizations do for new goals, aims, continuing obviously the legacy. Yes, absolutely, which all I think organizations and charities have to have. Yep. But it's important to still hold those the legacies that we've talked about, remember, reflect and act on some of the great achievements that have been done in the past.
It's because SCRA has, and all organizations do, they peak and trough.
Yeah,
peak and trough.
Yeah,
right. And we're coming back up.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
But the reason we were down is not necessarily because of people not doing. Mm. It's just circumstances at the time.
Yes.
Which drives you down.
Yeah.
You've got to have the ability and the willingness to get back up there.
Which, if any profession is capable of doing, it's Rangers. The adaptability of our roles, the shared skills, again, whatever you would like to call it, it is the profession that we are designed and built to do, is change with the times and, continue our roles as best as we can, but in whatever circumstances that we need to do it in. Mm-hmm. Likewise with SCRA, all our contribution and members and everything else, it's their time and hard work that, hopefully pays off in the long run, and, the little things that we're doing now can definitely flourish and grow into bigger things if the persistence continues.
Mm.
Yeah. We've obviously touched upon then the IRF, and I think that quite nicely leads into, I don't know, is there anything else you would like to highlight in the IRF before we move on?
It's happening in Scotland and internationally.
Yeah, so we'll come on to that. That leads quite nicely into what would you like to start seeing happening in Scotland and international? I suppose the general term for that would be the future of Rangers.
Right.
I
personally would like to see, one, Ranger numbers greatly increased, to be achieved in delivering and protecting our countryside. Because unless SCRA makes the case and continually, we made the case through recent happenings such as petition, etc., but that needs to be ongoing.
Yeah.
And it needs to be involving, as I said earlier, with organisations like COSLA, like the Scottish Parliament, etc., and continue to work at these levels.
Could you highlight maybe I think we've talked about it anyway, but I don't know if we've quite involved numbers, but what are what has the numbers of Ranger Services now looked like in comparison to the Ranger Services of the past?
Some are no longer there and there are new ones.
Mm.
There's probably more services at the moment.
Yeah.
But
less Rangers.
Less Rangers, because a lot of the Rangers posts today are basically supported by trusts, relying on grants, and grants don't always last.
Yeah.
And there have been incidents of the Mull Ranger Service after 20 years more or less being disbanded, and it was only saved because people put their hands in their pockets, and I put my hand in my pocket to donate something to make sure that that service was still going to be there. That, to me, is not looking at what the structure needs within Scotland. Scottish Government needs to address these issues. But the only people who can put it to them is this association.
I think the numbers recently, we had a survey and we took in, I think it was something like over 90 organisations across the whole of Scotland. And I think it was over 400 Rangers that had been recorded, and I can't remember if that was as of addition to the funding, as we've highlighted, of last year, that brought in another 120 posts, which is a huge amount and hasn't happened like anything else in the recent years. What would you say the prime time or the highest amount of Rangers were in the country?
Probably before austerity was applied.
Okay, so
it'd probably be about, I would think back, it would be probably 320 to 330 Rangers then.
Uh-huh.
And then it was just went, the austerity came in and it just went,
so we have actually grown then to some degree.
Have they grown, but not yes. Securing full-time posts.
Yeah.
That's the next road.
Yes. Yeah. Your next point then.
Right, Rangers to be recognised for the role they have played over 50 years in the protection and delivery awareness in saving the planet's future.
So
I think we need to profile. I feel that we need to be profiling
ourselves.
Big time.
I think Rangers, and as any profession, but it's important to actually acknowledge the significance that you have within your role, any job, but more importantly as a Ranger, you know, for the wider picture. I feel like, and I've mentioned it probably on the podcast already, I think due to times you fittingly have this survival instinct to lock yourself in your bubble or whatever you want to call it, focus on your core role, your core duty, and for however long a period of time you stay in that, you forget about the wider, your wider contribution to the Ranger services as a whole in Scotland, but also, you know, internationally. We're all doing the same job, you know. It's very much a people and planet role. It's protecting, you know, the planet, most importantly, that we live on, but it's also making people understand why it's important in the first place.
I always bring it up, look, to the point of, it's not necessarily the Rangers' perception, nor the employer's perception of what a Ranger is.
Mm.
The perception that is important is the public's perception.
Absolutely, yeah.
And if we don't meet that expectation, then professionally we're finished.
Yeah, we have to sell ourselves to them. Professionally. Tell them, you know,
and we are professional, but you need to do it.
Yeah.
And that is one thing I certainly have, for a long, long time, thought about. I would like to see a commitment taken by the Scottish Government to establish a funding a new Scottish National Ranger training course.
Yeah.
And I think that it would show some commitment. It would also set a marker that local authorities may get the expenses of the money required for that to happen.
I mean, funding is core to any, more importantly, any sector, and particularly, obviously, any, you know, from local authority to organisation that obviously has these big budgets and all these different roles within it to support, you know, it ties into everything else we've said. Rangers highlighting their importance and worth to their employers is significant, because obviously that'll depend on the money that is put into them within it, but also, you know, external funding is always going to be important for Ranger services, for them to both seek out that funding, which, you know, has been a common occurrence for Ranger services across the country for many years, but also then, as you said, not necessarily the onus being on them. We need that to change. We need it to be more a current and consistent funding that is acknowledged and given by, you know, the people that hold the purse strings, makes everything happen, and that, is the Scottish Government, which, you know, it comes down to any, you know, quarrel or any qualm, you know.
See, one of the areas that I certainly feel that no one has really looked at, and I look back at my 37 years of being a Ranger and wonder what value and impact did I have on the people that I engaged with. And I remember I worked with primary 7 pupils doing environmental studies in primary 7 in the 1980s. Today these people are now in their 50s. What impact, what set did I have in their awareness for the rest of their life? And that evaluation needs to be done somewhere down the line, so that we know the value, because it's all pounds, shillings and pence at the end of the day.
And then they're passing down what you've taught. It's a generational thing, as always. You know, they're passing down, hopefully, what they've taught and their experiences with, you know, the services that they are most, you know, it'll be surely one of their most favourable child, you know, memories of their youth, passing it down to their kids. And I feel like it's that thing as well where, yes, it can be a generational thing and that's important, but then if they're passing down all these great memories to their kids, that's not necessarily going to mean anything to their kids or young, you know, teenagers, whatever, if they don't have the opportunity to have the same experiences, because then you have that connection lost, you know. So what if my, you know, my father, my mother, whatever, had these opportunities, if, you know, at the end of the day you don't have them because you're not able to relate or connect in the same way.
In the biking club we had social return on investment,
yeah,
which was basically valued at £7 for every pound was invested.
Yeah.
So if the ranger can evaluate, that was only one aspect of my job.
Yeah.
If you can look at all the different aspects of the ranger's job and you can establish that type of outcomes, well, then there's the true value, how rangers are valued for to be supported in the future.
Yeah. A continued thing we've touched upon is, or as well, and several other, you know, people I spoke to on the podcast, is the important rangers have, not just across conservation, but also other, you know, society things such as healthcare, education, you know, a lot of these healthcare, you know, the ability to access the outdoors, you know, we're seeing it, you know, in rare occurrences of, you know, actually being prescribed as, you know, and having, you know, access to the countryside. It's the whole wider thing, isn't it? Providing the what do you call it? It's a prevention rather than getting to that stage of, you know, emergency desperation. It's preventing the issues from happening before they happen. And I think ranger services often aren't, it's that, again, knowing what you do well as a profession and talking about it, making other people aware, and, you know, people actually recognising it at higher positions, you know, Scottish Government and everything else, that we're not just, you know, outdoorsy, conservation type people. We fit into so many other things in society and make so many other differences, which you've obviously done a huge amount of in your career.
Enjoyed. I have a quote, and it was taken, I said it in the context of the launch video for SNH. This is my quote. I may only have 45 minutes of a young person's whole education to leave a lasting impression. That, to me, sums up a lot of it.
And if anyone's able to make a long-lasting impression within that space of time on their, you know, entire life, that is, you know, it shows the value itself in the role and the service that you're providing, if you're able to make that longer-lasting impression. Yeah. Which...
The other quote that I use from John Muir, who I have read many a book on the man, and he inspired me greatly in his whole content.
It's a fantastic story,
and there's many quotes of him. But my quote that I took from him was, within 5 minutes walk from my place of habitation, I arrive at the inexhaustible pages of nature. That's what country parks are about.
No, wholeheartedly. I think it's funny that you mentioned these significant people. I think often role models or people of my generation are... It's that textbook thing, isn't it? You may never meet the people that you are inspired most by. But I think unknowingly, or maybe knowingly, I think people like yourself, on a more relatable sense, are these John Muirs, one might say, within the profession of, and particularly the Ranger Service of Scotland. And, you know, some people might rightly so, you know, hold people like yourself accountable to that. I think you certainly have proven, and, you know, with everything that you've said just now, and that, you know, that amount of time that you've committed to the profession is worthy of that. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our wider Scottish, UK and international ranger listeners then, Bob? You've shared a huge amount of, obviously, your legacy, and yeah, just, this is your time to say what you'd like for them to hear.
Well, to them I'd say you have a massive job ahead of you, right? For your actions through being highly professional and commitment to working with communities to assist them to save this planet, that to me is the is the road forward. IRF, ERF members contribute each other, sorry, support each other. You're a global family. And if nothing came out of establishing IRF, that's what it is, and it's going to be there for a long time to come.
No, hear, hear. Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. I don't know, is there anything else you'd like to say, Bob, before we finish up?
That's fine, yep.
No, that's it's been a real pleasure just sitting down and hearing all this. You obviously hear it in snippets, or I certainly have over the last few years, but to just sit down and kind of hear the whole story really does set the bigger picture, which is obviously what your kind of legacy has been all about. For, again, all the things we've kind of mentioned, if you'd like to find out more about the Scottish Countryside Rangers Association, SCRA, you can find us on our current website. We're in the process of upgrading. We know its flaws, we're well aware of that, the current one, all things technical and everything else. So that is going to be improved in the hopefully near future, but the information on it is still very much relevant. So yeah, please do check that out. Again, on other social channels such as Instagram, Facebook, etc. And then the International Rangers Federation, again, you can find out kind of all the things we've talked about and our current connections with the wider Ranger world on their websites and social media channels as well. But I will let you get on with the rest of your day. And yeah, again, no, it's just been a real pleasure, Bob, and thank you for
the opportunity.